I'll never forget. We were all sitting on the beach at the end of the day, and my niece was playing, and I just broke down and just could not handle it. And my mom was just like, "What is going on?" You know, and what, you know, and I said, "I just can't do this anymore. I just don't know what to do, but I'm done."
Welcome to episode 3 of Finding Joy in Life's Sticky Moments. Before we begin, I want to share some ways to enhance your experience with us. After you listen to our next guest share her journey to find joy, we want you to know that you can find a helpful resource page provided by each guest to help those facing similar challenges, as well as a devotional page to go along with each podcast. These resources can be found at readchurchaugusta.org under the Adult Ministry tab. We hope this will make your experience with us even more meaningful. How do you find joy in life's difficult moments? Life is full of challenges, both big and small. Come explore some sticky moments with the women of Reed Memorial and be inspired to find, keep, and share joy in life's journey. On behalf of Reed Memorial, join me, Joy Maple, for our podcast study and helpful resource page to encourage you to find joy in life's sticky moments. I'd like to introduce our next guest, Anna Sanders. She has been a member of Reed Memorial for about 10 years, but even more exciting for us is that she is our new preschool and MDO director, and we're so glad that you're with us today, Anna.
Yay, thank you for having me, Joy. I'm so glad to be here.
We're glad that you were here. Well, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Anna, and I'm originally from Rock Hill, South Carolina. Grew up there. From an early age, wanted to be a teacher. I think I remember third grade. That was kind of the year that I said, you know what, this is what I want to do. And planned that out, followed that. Graduated from Presbyterian College, go Blue Hosts.
Woo!
And started teaching right after. Moved to Columbia and started my teaching career there. I taught first and second grade for several years. And then met my husband, Steve. And he was kind of ready to change careers, so we got married and moved to Columbia. We had been in Charlotte before that, and he started law school, and I continued teaching. Had plans to start a family at some point, and then kind of hit a big roadblock.
Wow. So it sounds, though, just hearing you, you're like, oh, and from third grade, I knew this and this and this. So right. You are quite the planner.
Oh, yes, quite the planner. And, you know, I had the plan. I said, okay, I want to be a teacher. Then I want to get married. Then I want to have a family. And those were the things that were on my list. And went to college, became a teacher, check. Met my husband, got married, check. And then it was, you know, okay, I think we're ready to start a family. But then, right.
A little sticky moment came then, didn't it?
Absolutely.
So tell us about that moment when you decided it's time on Anna's schedule.
Right. So, yeah, we made that decision, and, you know, several months kind of went by, and things just kind of weren't happening. And I knew something was up anyway, so I decided to go see a physician, my physician, about it. And, you know, we tried a couple of avenues, and those still were not working. And then at that point, my physician said, you know, I really think you need to go see a specialist because I'm not quite sure what's going on here.
How are you feeling when all this was starting? Were you just in a panic, or were you like, I got this, no problem, we're just going to go and get it taken care of?
Right. No, I was immediately in a panic. Like I said before, everything kind of had all followed naturally into place. And this was something that I really, really always wanted, you know, probably more than to be a teacher, you know, was to be a mom. And so seeing my older sister and seeing my sister-in-law and, you know, friends around me be successful and starting their families, you know, it was kind of like, wait, well, what's wrong with me? You know, why was this not hard for my sister? And why was this not hard for my mom? And, you know, we had no family history of anything that I should have known about that would have been a hindrance. But, yeah, so I went to see a specialist, and off the bat, you know, he diagnosed me with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Wow, that's a mouthful. Tell us a little bit about what that is right. and all that good stuff.
So essentially that just means that you don't ovulate regularly. And, you know, we had gone through several tests and, you know, checked things, and that was what they found. So, but what was interesting is I didn't quite appear to be a polycystic ovarian syndrome candidate. I didn't check all the boxes of the characteristics that followed that. So it kind of made it difficult for the doctors to, you know, figure that out. And then from there it was, okay, so now what? You know, well, he wanted to start me on this medication. Well, then we got to the tail end of law school and it was time to move. Because Steve got a job in Augusta. So it was kind of like, well, what do we do now? I've just gotten started with this physician, and he kind of seems to know what's going on and how to, you know, get things going, but we got to move. So we moved to Augusta, and I started seeing a new endocrinologist here. But it was like starting over.
I was just going to say, is it tough? Because you build this relationship right. with these doctors
right.
and you're entrusting them, and this is something so important to you. And then you're like, okay, right when it's a crucial point,
right.
now we're moving.
Right. Absolutely. So. It was starting over. And of course, this doctor, you know, had other thoughts and thought, well, I don't know if this is exactly, you know, it might be PCOS, but there might be something else. So,
starting,
like, I had an MRI done. I mean, all kinds of things. And it tacked on more time. And so, you know, we were just moving so slowly. And it was extremely difficult.
Were you just getting so antsy?
I was getting very antsy.
And give us a sense of, like, what kind of time frame you're talking about. So when you started to this moment when you're in Augusta and they're like,
right.
I don't know. Was that a year? Was that two? Was that months?
So
was it weeks?
This started, we started the process probably in like 2010, and we moved in 2011. So it had been, you know, close to probably 8 months that we had started seeing that first doctor. And then we moved to Augusta, and, you know, it took me probably 2 or 3 months to get in with this doctor to be seen. And then, let's see, about 6 to 8 more months of doing different things with her, and things just were not working, and were getting more and more difficult, emotionally, physically, and just to the point where we just were losing hope.
I mean,
we just thought, this is just not going to happen. So that I kind of entered a pretty dark place at that time. You know, we were in a new town trying to, make new friends.
All those stressors. What? A new job, new town, a move,
well,
you know.
All of them. I mean, Steve and I, when we got married even, we, right after our wedding, a week later after our honeymoon, we moved to a new city, bought a house. He started law school and I started a new job. And I remember being in our, counseling with our minister, and he said, listen, y'all, you do realize you have like 4 out of the 5 biggest life stressors going on. So,
yeah, you were like, oh, we're a super couple. We got this going
yes.
on. Yeah.
Listen, our, you know what our song was? Our first dance was Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now.
There you go. Starship. You didn't
and
know what
we had
a foreshadowing
no idea
that was.
What that was going to be, but it holds true today.
So here you are in Augusta, right. and things are not going smoothly.
No.
All these, you know, transitions.
Right.
So now what?
Well, so I got to a point where I just looked at Steve and I said, I can't do this. I need a break. I'm not seeing anything happening, and I just don't know what to do. But right now, I just can't handle it one more day. And you know, I'd started a new job at Trinity on the Hill as a pre-K teacher. And so you can imagine what that's like on a day-to-day basis. You're watching these young women come in with their babies, you know, dropping their kids off. And, you know, I had to go through that every single day. As much as I loved teaching and love it, it was probably one of the most challenging things I was doing. I was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
But I loved it so much.
Well, it's so that was and they're hard. Living the life that you want they, to live, and you're trying to make steps, but it's not getting you there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, we said, okay, we're just going to take a break. I wasn't feeling supported by my physician. There were all these things, but I will say this. I was definitely feeling supported by the women that I was working with and the director that I worked for. I definitely feel like that was God's hand in this, just giving me that I needed at that time. So anyways, we took a break, and it was that following summer. We were down at the beach with my family, my parents, my brother's wife, and I was, you know, still in a very dark place, and I'll never forget. We were all sitting on the beach at the end of the day, and my niece was playing, and I just broke down and just could not handle it. And my mom was just like, "What is going on?" You know, and what, you know, and I said, "I just can't do this anymore. I just don't know what to do, but I'm done." And my sister-in-law, who grew up in Charlotte, just said, "Anna, you know, I never even thought about this, but I grew up next door to a fabulous endocrinologist that opened his own practice in Charlotte." And she starts telling me all about him and how he's a believer, and, you know, and had I thought about maybe just getting another opinion. And I just said, "You know what? Okay." And Steve and I said, "All right, let's do it." So we did. We went up to Charlotte, and we got in his office, and he shut the door, and he had already, you know, seen all my huge file, and just said, I know what's going on here, and I know how to help you." And I mean, I just lost it. He basically said, "You know, you have PCOS, but you are a different kind for sure." And he said, "But this is not something that you did. This is just how you were made." And for whatever reason, I never really thought about it that way, but I think I had put so much pressure on myself that I had done something that, you know, God was keeping this from me for some reason. But, you know, he made me, you know, understand that this is just how you've always been.
When you were sitting on the beach, mm-hmm. and you had that moment, did you just think that God had just left you? And like, why? If we're told that God gives us the desires of our heart, and I've always wanted this baby, these children, why?
Absolutely.
And then did you ever think also that maybe, well, okay. I mean, I'm just thinking logically as me, I would probably go, well, maybe that's why I wanted to be a teacher, because God knew that I wasn't going to have children. You know, I mean,
Yeah,
and so where was your faith in this, going through this kind of struggle? What happened to your faith at that time? Was there a point where you were just like, "I'm done, God, I'm out"? Or did you draw closer and lean in?
Right. So, yeah, I grew up Presbyterian.
Hence the blue hose.
That's right.
We have to give one more shout out.
Yeah, and, you know, so I feel like, you know, I always had those tools in my toolbox, you know, the scripture that I needed. But what I didn't have was the relationship, that personal relationship. And so sitting on the beach, yes, I felt like I had done something. I felt like either I had done something or, you know, this just, you know, wasn't going to be my story, you know, that I just wasn't going to have children in the way that I expected to have kids, you know.
Sure.
Maybe I was going to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so at that point, once we made the decision to move forward and head to Charlotte, you know, I started opening up to more people. Before that, I was very closed. I didn't want people to know. Again, I felt like it was just like something that I had done. And so I kind of decided, okay, you know what? I can't do this by myself. And that's kind of something that my mom kept reminding me, you know, you're not here to do this alone. Mm-hmm. Let us help you, you know. And so I decided, okay, and I started journaling. I had already been journaling a little bit, but I started journaling, and I started sending out updates to family and friends of family, close friends. And I just put it out there and told him what was going on because a big change was about to come.
Right. And when you decided to put it out there, was it freeing or did you just feel the love or were you just kind of like, I mean, what kind of experience did you have after that? Was it a vulnerable time for you?
Oh, absolutely. It was very freeing. It was very vulnerable. You know, up until that point, because I had not told anyone what was happening, I felt like, you know, you always hear about people who ask, you know, when are you going to start a family? You know, isn't it time? The clock's a ticking, you know.
And you're like, stop it.
I mean, I was at the point where I was like, gosh, I wish I could just wear a sign that said, do not ask me about, you know.
About having children.
You know, I can't or whatever. Just yeah. So that I could avoid all that. But yeah, so I just, putting it out there immediately, I was flooded with emails, calls from family and friends, you know, just telling me like, we're with you and, you know, lean on this scripture or have you read this or can I put you in touch with my friend who, you know, went through the same thing. So those were all, that was just
such awesome. great support. So you're at this new doctor, you're putting it out there, so you're feeling supported. Mm-hmm. What's transpiring now? Did things begin to change? Did you feel like God was moving you in a different direction?
Yes. I mean, just, I felt like that day when he said, you know, when he said, there's nothing wrong with you. This is just how you were made. I mean, this, what he was essentially saying is, this is how God created you. And this is going to be part of your story. But I'm going to help you. And, you know, we're going to get through this. So his recommendation was the best avenue for us would be in vitro fertilization. So we made the decision to move forward with that. And when I said big changes were to come was that I had to essentially just move in with my parents back home.
Oh, wow.
During this process, because it's a very long process. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did.
And so did you leave your position at Trinity and you moved in with mom and dad?
Right.
What an experience that was, kind of going home after being on your own for so long.
Well, you know, like I said, I was totally supported at Trinity by these women who had been praying for us. And I even had my classroom of children and their families praying for us.
Aww.
and let them know. And they, I had to take sort of a leave of absence and moved in with my parents and was just, you know, taken care of daily by them. Steve would come, you know, visit on the weekends when he could, and we made it work. But I was so grateful for that because, you know, had they not been in Rock Hill, like, I would have been by myself. What a lonely place that would have been.
Sure.
So stayed there, journaled, continued my journaling, continued updating everyone. And part of that journaling, too, was part of it. It kind of turned into something bigger, and I didn't realize it at the time. For me, one thing that I struggled with was, and a lot of this happened during that dark time when I was, you know, not reaching out to anyone, but I was finding it really hard to find other women who were going through this, but who were Christians. I could find lots of blogs online to read, but it was very dark. I couldn't find any light in those blogs.
Sure.
And so what ended up happening was...
was this like an intentional search, though, to find, or was this a byproduct to find joy and to find light in your journey? Because you were like, I can't take this anymore. I can't take all this dark and negative and,
right.
you know, dismal kind of thing. I need to stay positive. I need to right. see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
I need to, you know.
Yeah, it was. So, and I think it was even suggested to me by a friend, like, have you thought about, you know, putting this out there, you know, and like even further. And so I was like, well, you know, if anything, I want to help somebody. Because when I was going through this, I didn't feel like I could really find anybody out there.
Well, and you know, if you haven't gone through it yourself, it's really hard to understand, comprehend,
right.
be super supportive. You know, we all want to empathize and sympathize and right. and encourage, but you know, it's hard when you know,
if those people that just think about having a child and they're like, oh, we're having one in 9 months, you know, and you're like,
you're like,
good for you.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you. Yeah. And you really are. But at the same time, you're like, I want that too.
Yes, because I will tell you, even when I did find, you know, when people put me in touch with people who had been through this, it's still really hard to talk with them, even though they have walked that road. But once they've, you know,
gone to the other side,
it's like all of a sudden they don't understand anymore. You know, it's like you almost want to be surrounded by people who are in it at the moment with you. Mm-hmm. So just started putting it out there. And
and how did you do that? Was that just through word of mouth or what was that?
Right. So, I said, you know what, I'm going to take all of these updates and I'm going to start them on a blog. Steve and I came up with a name of it. It's called Invariably Faithful because it's got the I, the V, and the F for IVF.
There you go.
And just put it out there for, you know, for others. And as I was going through this process, I was having people contact me saying, can I share your name and number with my friend? She's going through this. And I was like, absolutely. So we ended up sharing the blog with them. And I've heard a lot of people say that was so helpful. And essentially what it was me just going through, you know, the process, explaining what was happening, but also, you know, showing them God's hand through it all. And so, you know, that's obviously another big part of my sticky moments.
Absolutely. So when you were sharing this, was it therapeutic for you to get it out there? Or did you find that there were benefits for you, not just for others? Because I know you're helping others, and that is a great thing. But sometimes just even talking about it, just expressing,
yes,
gosh, today was a frustrating day, or this procedure today did not go well.
Right.
Was that
so therapeutic?
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought of myself as a writer, but I realized how therapeutic it was for me. So every morning I would get up, and you know, through this process there's a lot of appointments, and so basically daily at some moments I was driving to Charlotte, so my mornings usually started with my devotion and then, you know, my journaling, and a lot of that was just to update everybody and what was happening. And then, you know, one thing that I found joy in was these 30-minute car rides from my parents' house to Charlotte. I started listening to Christian music, and just jamming out all the way there, you know, because there's so much uplifting words in those songs.
So did your faith transform during this time? I mean, you've always been a faithful critter.
Right.
So, like, were you like, okay, this is nothing new, but did you find a kind of a new avenue and a new opportunity to grow your relationship?
Yeah. So one of my favorite devotionals that I leaned on during this time was Jesus Calling, that someone gave me. And I think what that devotion does, because it essentially is Jesus speaking to you, it started to make me feel like he was there, right there with me. Even so much that, like, there was one moment when I was, like, you know, driving to Charlotte, jamming out to my music, and I literally just started talking to Jesus, like he was riding in the car with me.
Oh.
And just feeling like, you know, I wasn't alone, because it can get really lonely in those cold
called doctor's offices on those tables.
Well, on those tables.
Let me ask you. So you got to Charlotte. You were moving in with mom and dad.
Yep.
What was the journey like once you got there? Was it smooth sailing? Were you like, yes, we're going to have a baby soon?
Right. Or, well, you know, that's the crazy part about this is up until that point, it never felt smooth. And as soon as I walked into that office, it was like, it all just started falling into place. We took several weeks for the egg retrieval to happen. And then after that, because of PCOS, my body needed to kind of rest. So that was a time where I could go back to Augusta for a little while. And then we would get ready for the transfer. Another crazy thing about PCOS is your eggs, you have a lot of eggs, but they may not be the best quality. So you get real excited during the retrieval, and I think I had like 20-something. But then by the end of the process of fertilization, it was, you know, we had two.
Oh, wow.
Two embryos. But I remember Dr. Wonderful, as I like to call him, said, you know what? You should be so proud of what you have because these are two beautiful, you know, embryos.
Like, of course.
Right. So then they freeze them. So they became my freezer babies so that I could rest. And then it was time for the transfer. And this is when I really started to see, really, really see God with us. So when we went back up for the transfer, we went to church with my parents that Sunday, and we were sitting there, and that was Sunday, so my transfer was scheduled for the very next day, and the minister preached the story of Hannah, and I just lost it during that service, because I just truly felt like God was speaking to me in that moment to give me that hope that I needed. My mom had always said to me during a lot of times, but mostly during those dark times, you know, you just have to have faith the size of a mustard seed, Anna. And she gave me a bookmark with the mustard seed. And that's a verse that's I've clung to. But, you know, it's as long as you have that faith, you can move mountains.
That's right.
He will move mountains. That's right. So that's something that, you know, I've clung to, because there were definitely some days where that was about all I had.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I couldn't give it anymore. And I just said, you know what? That's what God's for. So, so we did the transfer, and it was successful. The very first one.
Now, give us just a little sense, because, you know, again, I'm just kind of ignorant about this whole process. Sure. What is the likelihood that the first one is going to take and that it's going to be wonderful and everything's going to go? Is it common that it doesn't? And what kind of?
I don't know what the percentage rate is, but it all depends on the quality of the embryo first. They're all graded. So they have a grade. And then obviously, you know, it all depends on your lining and how beautiful that looks. And but it's not, I mean, it's not obviously 100% that it's going to, that's going to happen.
How nervous were you?
Extremely nervous.
Going into that day.
Like, I will tell you this, during the transfer, it was around Christmas time. Okay. And the song Run, Run, Rudolph came on. That was the song that was playing when Hamp was
created. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Run, so, Run, Rudolph. All right. So we've got a couple theme songs going on in the Sanders family here.
I know. So every time we hear that, we always, you know, and I hope one day I get to share the story with Hamp. You know, and can tell him that, you know.
Yeah, that'll be his new favorite Christmas song, right, of it, you know.
Right.
So, but, you know, okay, so the transfer, everything goes well.
Right.
When do you know? Is it just like it is for a, you know?
No, you know, pretty soon. They do, you know, they see you, they check you, but you know about 4 weeks when you're pregnant.
Okay.
You know, which...
Right.
And then, you know, which can kind of make it a long 9 months when you find out at 4 weeks.
Well, let me ask you this. So you get that exciting news and you're just so pumped because this dream is becoming a reality. But what was your attitude during the pregnancy? Was it like, I got this now? Or were you panicked the whole time?
Okay. I was terrified. Okay. You know, honestly, probably until the third trimester, you know, I really was just panicky. But
and you were like, and I'm not living with mom anymore.
I know. She's not feeding me. Oh god. No. But it was an incredible day, you know, to get that call. I actually still have the voicemail on my phone.
Do you? And do you listen to it often?
I do. Every year around Hamp's birthday. I really do. It's just a beautiful reminder, you know, that he can move mountains. Because there were definitely times where I thought this is never going to be my future, you know, or at least, you know, biological children.
Right. So you had a successful delivery. You have a wonderful Hamp. Yeah. Now tell us about Hamp and tell us about somebody else that's pretty that's wonderful.
Right. So Hamp is 8. He, you know, is all boy. Everybody says he's my spitting image. But he's pretty awesome. Smart kid. And
And you're not fibbing at all, because he is pretty awesome.
He is. We actually went to the fair yesterday and had a little date together. It was there really nice. But yeah. So yeah, Hamp is 8. And then so I mentioned I had another embryo that was also beautiful. And probably about a year after he was born, we made the decision to, you know, thaw that one out and do another transfer. And I was still very nervous. But again, I just, you know, I went right back into those scriptures that I held so closely to. I also didn't get to mention, but a lot of people gave me things throughout my journey to cling to. I had several, you know, cradle crosses that I would carry into all of my doctor's appointments. At one point, I had just a bag of things, and I just could not go into any of my appointments without them.
So they were like, here comes the bag, lady.
Yeah, I had, you know, bracelets and just crosses everywhere. So I pulled all those things back out, you know, and, you know, said, I'm putting on my armor again. Here we go, God. You know, I'm giving it to you again. And we went through that transfer, and unfortunately, we did not come out successful with that round. Oh, wow. So, and that was tough. It was tough. And, you know, even though I hear I had beautiful Hamp, and I just, it was tough. So we waited a little while and tried to decide, okay, are we gonna go through this whole thing again? Wow. Should we go through this whole journey again?
Sure.
Should we do it a little different? But I just had it on my heart that God wanted us to put that faith in Him again and give it a go. And so we did. And this is kind of another God moment, but we went through the round of egg retrieval, and it was looking really good, and I was feeling really confident, even more confident than the first time we had done it. And we came out with, you know, more eggs to be fertilized. Well, they started the fertilization process and got to takes about 6 or 7 days. By day 7, you know the quality of the embryos that have made it and their grade. Well, we got to about day 3, and the embryologist, she'll call you every day, or he will call you every day, give you an update. And on day 3, they called and they said, well, you know, it's looking all right. You know, you've got a couple here, and there's a couple in the back that are kind of taking a little slower time, but, you know, we'll just keep watching. And then we got to day 5, and they called. And this was a very, very difficult conversation. But the embryologist basically said, look, I don't think we're going to have anything at the end of this week. There are just, you know, some that have stopped growing and some that are just really not doing a whole lot. But, you know, we're going to give it another day or two and I'll call you back. And I mean, I
lost it.
Just lost it. And I went right back into that deep, dark moment of, I can't. How am I going to do this? What am I going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, I've always just been such a creature of being in control of things. Even at an early age, like I said, I had everything planned out. And so this was just, again, another moment of me saying, I cannot be in control of this. You know, I can plan, but God is going to, you know,
have to
put those steps in place the way that He sees them be.
Sure.
And I just have to, I can't. There's nothing else I can do but just pray and hope and be faithful. Because of all the folks that I had led into my life, you know, during the first round, these same group, my prayer warriors, were all back at it. And I put it out there to them, you know, this was what was going on. Please pray with us. Please, we need a miracle. I mean, right. A miracle. So the very next call that I got, the embryologist called and she said, you are just not going to believe this. She said, I actually can't believe this myself. But this embryo that was way in the back a few days ago has developed and is absolutely beautiful and ready to be frozen.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, oh my gosh, like miracle. This is the hand of God. And that's Lewis, my second born.
And he is a muffin too. I just love both your boys. I mean,
he is. And you know, it's funny because that is so his personality. When I delivered him in the hospital that night, when the nurse was coming in to check, you know, she said, golly, he is such a fighter, that one. And I said, you have no idea. And that is still true to him today. I mean, he's only five, but that little kid is a fighter. And, you know, he just does what he wants to do. You know,
they're both so great. They're just awesome. And you are so blessed to have both.
I am so blessed. So Lewis, number two.
Number two. And after that, were you like, okay, God, I will be happy with these two beautiful boys.
Absolutely. We said, wow, we were doubly blessed.
So this was a long journey with a great outcome, as my mother would like to say. She always says, it's when you go to the hospital and you get a dividend. So you got two dividends from this journey. But what did you learn about yourself in this sticky moment, this journey?
So definitely learned to let go and let God. And that is something that I saw early on in my life, because my grandmother used to wear this pin. And that's what it said, let go and let God. But it really and truly is what has stuck with me, because I used to be or want to be in control of everything. And this has taught me that I'm not in control. He's in control. And the way that my life unfolds is not necessarily the way that, you know, that he's going to have it unfold. But what's awesome is I can look back at my life, at the things that were sticky, and I can say, wow, like, that's perfect. That was done perfectly, you know? So that's truly what I've learned, is just to let go and let God.
Well, okay, and you mentioned earlier in today's talk that you folks that have gotten through to the other side don't get the journey anymore. They've gotten what they wanted, they're happy, and they seem to have forgotten. How do you balance the, I'm going to enjoy where I am, but I'm going to remember the journey that got me here?
It's hard not to forget about those other women going through what they're going through. Because I look at my boys every day, and it's a reminder to me, you know, how hard that time was. But I just truly hoped that with that blog, it being out there, and it still is, that it would help somebody somehow. And if it's not me talking to them, but that maybe someone else has read it, or someone who knows me and knows my story can share that with them. But certainly, I never, ever ask any woman when they are thinking about having a baby.
You're like, never again. That is the one thing I've learned in this journey.
Never.
Never.
You know, because it's, you just never know what's going on, what's truly going on.
Sure. We don't know, do we? Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I think it's so interesting, because now that you are on the other side of it, do you ever find yourself going, hang up, Lewis. Ugh. You know, I mean, as a mom, we all lose our cool and our patience. But then does something dial you back and you go, oh, wow.
We worked so hard
for you. We worked so hard for you to get under my skin and make me want to pull my hair out every day. But I love you, and I'm so grateful for you, because I think that is kind of the hard thing. You know, we get back to life, mm-hmm. so to speak. And when we've gone through a journey like this, or a sticky moment, mm-hmm. to kind of remember what it was like when things weren't easy, and to be grateful for what you have. And even like you said, even if new sticky moments come, that God is at work in all things, and he has blessed you with these wonderful boys.
Oh, right. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're human. So we go through these hard times, but when we come out of it, it is so easy to forget, you know, and to take advantage of what we have right in front of us. So honestly, I have left a lot of those visual reminders, those cradle crosses and things, throughout my house. And those things kind of help me, because when I see them, I immediately think of those times and those people who
helped you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So kind of keeps me in check.
So you've been through this journey now. One piece, or what is one piece of advice that you would give someone going through this exact same thing that would be helpful?
Yes. So it is quite an exhausting journey, I will say, for people emotionally. I mean, just up and down and all around. And I would say to, you know, let yourself lean on those around you who love you, and you know, don't put it all on yourself and hide it. You know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's, you know, but that there are so many women out there who are also going through this that you may not have any idea. I prayed very hard before we moved to Augusta when we started this journey that God would give me the people that I needed. And he did, and he did it even more so than I could have ever imagined. Because when we joined Reed early on, as soon as we moved here, I was introduced to two women who had been through this before. And then on top of that, we bought our house in a little neighborhood, and after we moved in, shortly after that, got to be really close with a lot of women in there, and I was probably the first out of a couple in there to go through this, but shortly after, three others in my neighborhood started having difficulty getting pregnant, and so I had these women right next door to, you know, cry on their shoulder and to, you know, scream out my frustrations and just to be totally raw with. So I would absolutely say
lean. Lean on your faith, lean on others.
Yeah, absolutely. On your faith, on others, but just to not do this alone.
That's great. Now, this journey that you've been on is a tough one, and it involves children. So how has that affected how you view your role as a preschool director and how you look at the children in that program and their families?
Oh, goodness. Well, first and foremost, it makes me realize that when these families come in the door, you have no idea what they're going through at home. And just to be mindful of that and to, you know, if I see someone come in, a parent even, because, you know, we're not there just for the kids. We're also there to minister to these families, to, you know, give them support. And if they don't know the Lord, to, you know, show them the love that Christ has for them. But if I see, you know, a mom come in who just looks so tired or just something's just not right, you know, to take a minute and to, you know, speak with them and give them the opportunity if they want to, you know, unload if they need to. So, you know, I think just having gone through what I went through, just, you know, realizing that, you know, because I remember when I started opening up, people just said, wow, I had no idea that you were going through this. You know, I wish you had told me. I wish I could have supported you. But man, you really knew how to put a mask on, you know. It could be anything that these families are going through. But just, you know, having that awareness, and then also just looking at these children that are in our building and thinking what precious, you know, blessings they are. Because when you think about and understand just the anatomy of how
what it took to get them
to get there, it's amazing.
It really is. A miracle.
It is a miracle. All of these things. So,
well, Anna, I'm so glad that we got to talk and share your story today.
And thank you.
One thing that I am going to take away from this is to let go and let God.
Absolutely.
So, if you have a little one or one on the way, and you want to check out a great program with a great preschool director, you need to check out Reed Memorial's Mother's Day Out in Preschool. Make an appointment to see Anna Sanders and take a tour of this wonderful facility. Come grow with Reed Memorial.
Join us every second and fourth Wednesday of the month on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and our website, readchurchaugusta.org.